panel this morning. Paula Penfold, a senior journalist with Stuff's investigative unit, Stuff Circuit, and Louis Holbrook, campaigns manager for the Taxpayers Union. Kia ora, Paula. Nice to see you.
Kia ora. Nice to see you too, Jim.
Morena, Louis. Thanks for coming in. The weather's been a bit tempestuous in Wellington. We haven't talked about the Wellington weather, just the top of the south, but I know you've copped it.
Morena, Jim. Yeah, it's been absolutely bucketing, but I didn't have an excuse to get out in it.
How do you mean? Oh, you mean yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. It was just insane. Well. Insane.
It settled down this morning, though.
Oh, it's lovely this morning.
As Wellington usually is. So a highlight or lowlight from the past week from each of our panellists to start. Louis, do you want to go first?
Sure. My highlight is really just an anecdote, something that made me laugh. After work on Thursday, I was walking home and I walked past the... It was the transgender rights protest outside the Michael Fowler Centre here in Wellington. So 500 or 1,000 of, you know, young, colourful people. And in front of me, there were two pedestrians looking at this protest, trying to figure out what it was about. And finally, one of them turns to his mates and points at this group of, you know, dyed hair, rainbow flags, young people, and says, "Oh, that must be the farmers. That'll be the farmers protesting." Which I thought was just delightful. I mean, you couldn't have found a group that looked less like your stereotypical farmers. But in Wellington, apparently, we do not stereotype.
Which is a very nice aspect of it, I suppose. Well, farming is changing, but perhaps not to that extent. How old were these people?
Well, the people in the audience were, you know, in their 20s or even teens. But these people in front of me, yeah,
That's what I meant,
25, 30, okay. Probably Wellington bureaucrats.
And they were, do you think that was serious?
Oh, it was serious, yeah. The other guy had to turn to his mate and say, no, mate, it's nothing to do with that.
Paula, what's been the highlight or otherwise for you this past week?
Well, speaking of the farmers, mine is a bit of a low light, actually, and it comes from the protest on Friday. And it's a low light because I thought it was a bit of an own goal in terms of some of the people who probably undermined the wider message of some of the serious issues that many of the farmers were wanting to protest. And the low light that I've saved on my camera phone is a photo of a placard that was fairly widely distributed, which reads, "We live in New Zealand, not Aotearoa. Stop ramming Māori language down our throat." And it was a low light for me because I thought, well, what's your message supposed to be today, for one thing? But also, what's the problem? Why? I know that you get lots of these emails and texts at Radio New Zealand, at RNZ, when, you know, there's a perception that there's too much te reo spoken. But what is the problem? And why undermine your serious message, I thought, the other day, by annoying people with an irrelevant message like that?
Well, probably that message annoyed a lot of the farmers too, who
yes,
thought it was irrelevant to their
cause. I mean, I presume that's a legitimate photo of an actual placard somewhere, and that's why I say people like that who have whatever beef that actually represents undermined the serious message.
You've written an anti-violence op-ed piece for the Sunday Star Times this morning. Can we talk about that just briefly, because it's personal for you?
I wrote it because it's personal indeed, because it was about the fact that my daughter Maya was assaulted along with her friend at the Western Springs 660 concert in February in Auckland at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
And they were both seriously concussed. The attackers, plural, were older men, and they unleashed their fists on our 17-year-old children. And the sentencing for one of them was last week, which is why I've written about it now. I feel upset even talking about it, actually, because those people had really no comprehension nor care for the damage that they were inflicting upon those kids just trying to have a good time in the mosh pit. And I wrote about it, you know, not that the thugs will be probably reading the Sunday Star Times, let's be honest, but maybe their parents will be, or maybe their mates will be, saying, "Stop punching people. Please just stop punching people."
I won't praise you a column because people can read it, but we have a problem with violence. And can I go to Louis on this as well? Is it getting worse, not better, despite all the anti-violence campaigns that we've had over the years? What do you both think? Louis, you first.
Well, I'm just so lucky to have never experienced something like this. But obviously, living in Wellington, I read the headlines that come up from Courtney Place. And certainly on that measure, it's getting worse. But also just the stats. I looked up the number of, I think it was, serious assaults causing industry. And they actually have doubled in the last, I think it was 5 years. And I don't know what the easy answer is, but clearly people haven't got it through into their heads just how high stakes this is, just how much damage one punch can do. And that's a real tough one, whether it's education or culture change. I don't see what kind of policy you could just pass to ram that home.
Yeah, those serious assault figures have got worse, you're right. Paula, what's your take on it, though?
In terms of how it's getting or why it's getting worse?
Yes.
Yeah, the messages are absolutely not getting through. And it's, you know, that was something at a public event. And I agree with Louis in terms of those stories that you keep on hearing. There was a fatal one in Auckland just a few months ago. It's happening at home as well, in people's homes all over the country. The messages are just not getting through. I don't know why.
Regarding the recent police shootings, your opinions on why we are becoming a society with guns on display all the time?
It's just, I mean, it's horrendous, isn't it? We are becoming increasingly like scenes that we see in America, and I feel terrified for the police, and clearly some of them feel terrified too when they speak of what it's like to have a gun presented. You know, there are the shootings that we hear of, and then there are the incidents in which guns are presented at police and not fired. It's commonplace now, and it must be absolutely terrifying. And we must soon start to see that reflected in difficulty in police recruitment, because really, why would you?
18 incidents since Constable Matthew Hunt was fatally shot with guns have been presented or fired at police or police dogs. Louis?
Yeah, I just try to understand what goes through someone's mind where they, maybe there's no calculation, but are they making some kind of calculation that says, actually it's worth it, I am going to pull out a gun in front of a police officer? And the only possible explanations to me are either that they're impaired mentally, whether that be through mental health or more likely drugs, or maybe the drug trade in New Zealand has just become so profitable, so high stakes, that people are willing to take these mad risks.
Okay, so drugs must be a major factor. But it is a sea change, isn't it? I don't want to dwell on this because we've got tons else to talk about. But something has happened.
Yeah, and the mention of drugs is pertinent because, of course, there's this horrific epidemic of meth use in this country, and the two things must be connected, not only in terms of those profits that Louis has mentioned, but also in terms of the impairment that comes with being fried on meth. I mean, if there's any calculation made, then it's not going to be a sensible one, is it, about whether or not to do that? But also the influence of organised crime, particularly some of those gangs that are coming over here from Australia, they are having an impact.
I challenged Jacinda Ardern and Andrew Little to sit on the floor in the waiting room of my ED for 10-plus hours waiting to be seen with their ankle fracture, as there is simply nowhere else to sit, or because they are simply one of 48 patients waiting to be seen at the same time. That is a nurse telling the health minister to come and see what's happening in our hospitals for himself. He's declined. He's happy, intensely monitoring the situation from the beehive. Would it be a good idea, Louis, politically, if he accepted?
Absolutely. As a minister, you cannot always trust your officials to have the knowledge or even the will to tell you what's really going on the front lines. So when you go down into your ED as a minister, you may risk being absolutely berated by a group of nurses, but that's part of the job. And I think on a certain level, taxpayers even respect that. We want to see our politicians on the front lines. We probably enjoy seeing them get heckled, but we probably also would respect that they go through that just to understand the reality. And the reality, by the sounds of it, is that we have a real shortage of nurses. People are getting burnt out, and it is only a matter of time before someone makes a mistake and someone gets seriously hurt.
Paula.
Actually, I agree. That's such a heartfelt plea, and those stats are so horrendous. And the way that that nurse has written that challenge to the health minister, I don't understand why you wouldn't accept that, actually, apart from the fact that it's going to be uncomfortable and awkward and you'll see things that you don't want to see, and you might find yourself backed into a corner in terms of having to make promises that you're not really prepared to make. But I think it would be at the very least politic for the minister to accept, if not that invitation, then one like it. Because for those very reasons, you need to see it firsthand. And he may think that he knows enough about it to understand it without having to witness it. But you don't, if you haven't been in one of those EDs for a while, You probably need a refresher because they're really blimmin' horrible to be in. They're so sad. They are so full and the nurses are working their butts off and they are exhausted. I think he should go.
Speaking of pressures on the nurses but also on wider society, as people are making comments on with regards to the rise in violence, seeming rise in violence. Consumer prices rose 1.3% in the June quarter, pushing annual inflation to 3.3%, highest level in 10 years. Louis, is this an inflation rate rise you see as transitory, as a lot of the economists are saying, or do you look at the world and think it's going to embed?
No, I think it'll be a bit more than transitory, and I guess I'll try to talk through just why I think that, not as an economist, but watching what's happening. I think this recent spike in inflation to 3.3% is the immediate, or at least the second-order result of the government's COVID-19 response. It was the $50 billion response, remember, and that was borrowed money from future taxpayers to spend today. And when the government is spending that money on government programs, goods, services, they're bidding up the cost of those goods and services. And the reason that I think it won't be just transitory is if you look at the government's pipeline of work, the projects that they actually haven't yet delivered on but say that they will deliver on, the $680 million bike bridge, the however many billion dollar light rail project, that will involve the bidding up of these labour, the materials, and it's in the context of closed borders, so there's a limited supply of labour, and we've got shipping disruptions, so there's a limited supply of materials, which will just intensify this bidding up effect. So no, I don't think it's transitory.
Yeah, and those effects aren't just the result of government projects. You're talking about private construction and delays in all sorts of materials and consumer goods as well.
Well, of course, and part of that is the indirect result of government stimulus. You could argue even that the government was maybe too successful in their stimulus program. Maybe this is the benefit of hindsight, but our economy was not undercooked in the way that we feared that it would be. So now all of this stimulus spending, to the extent that it has been successful, has also intensified that bidding up effect, both in the public and the private sectors.
Paula, people under pressure get under more pressure when inflation rises. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Whether it's transitory or not, there's a direct impact right now for people who are, you know, when you look at the fact that petrol was one of the biggest contributors, that rent was one of the biggest contributors to that CPI rise, it's exactly the people who are struggling the most who, you know, that 3.3% is going to impact on the worst.
Kiwis coming home, a typical Facebook comment, those who've gone to Australia and got stuck should suck it up. Anyone who doesn't understand the unpredictability of COVID-19 has not been paying attention. The Prime Minister had a different take on that this past week.
The people who went to Sydney did not go there knowing they'd have to go into MIQ on the way back. So that's why we've created that contingency, to manage a scenario where we as a government are deciding that's what needs to happen to you.
How much compassion, Paula, did you have for the people clamouring? I mean, there's always individual cases of deep compassion, but generally clamouring to get back into New Zealand from Australia.
That's the thing. It is a bit of a sliding scale of compassion, isn't it, depending on their reason for being there in the first place. Those who have been visiting sick or dying relatives, of course you feel compassion for them. Maybe to a lesser extent, those who went for a shopping spree in Sydney, although when they went, they didn't know this was going to be the outcome, except for the fact that there was a risk, of course, always, that this would be the possibility. So I don't know. I don't have a huge amount of compassion for that lesser end of the scale.
Louis, if the government set aside MIQ spots in this way as a contingency, this might be puzzling some people, perhaps yourself. Hasn't this prevented other Kiwis coming home? The government says not, that the two needs are unrelated. Are you confused about the argument that New Zealanders fleeing Australia aren't lengthening the queue for other returnees?
Well, clearly if you take a spot in MIQ, under our current program, you are effectively denying someone else a spot. However, in saying that, I still actually do have some compassion, because this zero-sum game that people are forced to play with MIQ, it's not actually a game that they chose. This is a result of a government's failure to actually lift the capacity of our MIQ system. So every time we point fingers and blame these people who are taking up MIQ spots, we're actually letting the government off the hook for not increasing our overall level of capacity. And we just talked about nurses before. I mean, that's another great reason we should be lifting our capacity so we can bring in nurses.
Kiwis are paying $2,500 for bots that will get them home, Paula, and 5,000 people a day trying to secure spots.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, isn't it, that there's not a better tech investment into improving the system, because the inequity that that brings when the people who can afford to pay that versus those who can't. I don't understand why the technology is proving so difficult for the ministry. I'm not a coder, but there are plenty of good ones out there. Why can't they make it a better system?
It's a bigger question than I can answer. 2,700,000, things we need to talk about in the next 5 minutes, if you don't mind. The $2,750,000 for the Mangere Mob's Kahukara drug rehab program. And on the figures presented in media, the money covers 9 cycles of treatment, each lasting 10 weeks. It's been said that's $300,000 a cycle, $30,000 a week. I hope I'm not confusing you. $3,000 per participant per week, although there will be whānau involvement costs as well. My question really is, does this sound steep, the amount of money that's being given for this drug rehab program? You first.
No, it sounds like a really sensible investment to me. I mean, we started this discussion with talk about the incidence of gang-related violence and drug issues. Of course, we want to start to invest some money into fixing those, and this looks like the kind of program that will actually reach people in a genuine, authentic way that actually might make a difference. And no, it's not steep. I think it's cheap.
Okay, Louis, do you have that same point of view?
I probably disagree quite strongly in the general sense, but to focus on the cost of it itself, I mean, you can imagine the Mangere Mob, or if you're a Mangere Mob leader and you set up this program, you're going to charge literally as much as you can get away with. That's how it works in these negotiations for government services. And that's especially the case if you're able to present your service as something else that no one can do, which I think is what the gang has done here. They've diversified their revenue by saying, look, we are the only ones who can reach out to these gang members. And maybe that could be effective, but it's also disturbing that we have to rely on these individuals to reach these communities. I'd certainly hope that the government's looking at other ways to get stronger connections to these communities on the ground.
Hang on, when you say diversified their revenue, you mean you view the $2.75 million as extra income for a gang?
Well, it's extra income for the gang leaders. Look, I don't claim to understand the financial structures of these organisations, whether we're talking about the gangs themselves or organisations like Hard to Reach. But if you look at the leadership of these organisations, you see they are really one and the same network.
I want to get on to Judith Collins on the demand, the debate billboards. Here she is.
Well, it's an opportunity for New Zealanders to demand the debate and go to demandthedebate.nz, where we're highlighting particular issues that the government did not campaign on, but which they're pushing through.
So, hei puapua, the taxing of the utes, no voter vetoes on Māori wards, etc. And there is a media narrative, and both of you are in a good position to comment on this, regarding the road the National Party's going down. And my question is whether media are correct in rejecting the appeal of that narrative. Simon Wilson in the New Zealand Herald saying there's tons of debate going on. It feels like every retrograde thing we know about the National Party all wrapped up in one terribly tangled knot. Or not. What do you think?
I mean, we should always be conscious of the lessons that media learned in America pre-Trump. We cannot dismiss the fact that there is an audience for some of the things that the National Party and Judith Collins is trying to say. However, it's been delivered, I think, in quite a ham-fisted way, and especially the beginning of it with the He Puapua one, where the leaked emails to Don Brash about fundraising for this just really messed it all up for National and kind of made a bit of a mockery about the whole hashtag.
Leaks mess up a lot of politics.
Don't they?
Now, these days. Louis, not much time left, but your thoughts on this?
I don't think there's anything wrong with a centre-right party making noise on these issues or even taking a populist line on these issues. But the problem for the National Party is the ACT Party already exists and is taking stronger positions on the same issues. So when, as a centre-right voter, you see a party saying, we demand a debate, well, frankly, I want a bit more than a debate. I want a clear position that I can understand. So it does seem a little bit ham-fisted.
I suppose part of my question to both of you was, do you think there's sufficient appeal from a political point of view to adopt the stance that the National Party has?
I don't know if there's sufficient. There is some appeal, isn't there? You can see, and it's a part of the cyclical nature of politics, isn't it, that it starts to turn at some point. So there's an appeal. Whether it's sufficient, not sure.
Yeah, maybe it's not like America where you can misread the groundswell at your peril. All right.
I think right now people aren't clamouring for a policy that appeals in that sense, but I think what National is trying to do is corner Labor or push them into taking a position on perhaps one of those hey, poor, poor recommendations. But as yet, Labor hasn't taken the bait.
Louis Holbrook, Paula Penfold on the panel, thank you both.